to welcome everybody to Wisdom from Our Neighborhood. Wisdom from Our Neighborhood is sponsored by Paths to Understanding, which is formerly Neighbors in Faith and the Tracy Levine Center. Our mission is bridging bias and building unity through multi-faith peacemaking. We do that through inspiring stories, nurturing relationships, and acting together. My name is Terry Kylo. I'm the Executive Director of Paths to Understanding. I live here in Anacortes. I'm also part of a group in Anacortes called the Inclusion, Diversity, and Equity in Anacortes group. And tonight I'm joined by a number of other members of the group tonight in a conversation about racism in small towns. This will be the second in this series, and we're happy to have all of you join us today. If you have any questions you'd like to share, if you're watching on Zoom, you can sure use the Q&A feature. If you're watching on Facebook, feel free to list any questions you have in the comment section of Facebook Live, and we'll be really happy to pick those up and incorporate those later on in the conversation. But first, I just want to introduce some folk. First of all, Kate Clark is an artist and educator who develops public art projects about social histories we avoid and a larger, more complex story that might light our future. Kate, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We also have today Anthony Young, who is serves on the Anacortes City Council and is one of the founders of the IDEA group in Anacortes. Anthony, welcome and thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And then next we have Keiko McCracken, who serves as the Community Engagement Coordinator for the Anacortes School District and a longtime resident of Anacortes. Keiko, thanks for being here.
Terry, thanks for having me. So I was the Community Engagement Coordinator, and now I serve in the Special Ed Department, and I just want to make sure everybody understands that the views I express here are my own, and I'm not representing the school district in this podcast.
Thanks for that correction, Keiko, and we'll all take your disclaimer seriously and well. And lastly, we have Leslie Eastwood, who's the general manager of the Samish Indian Nation and is a Samish tribal citizen. Leslie, welcome and thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure, Terry, to join. And I would also echo what Keiko said in terms of my participation here is not officially in my role as general manager. It's mostly being a Samish citizen. I've lived here in Anacortes for over 20 years. My ancestors have been here since time immemorial. And I'm raising a Native child in the district. So those are all really the important points about why I'm eager to participate.
Thank you, Leslie. We're so glad you're with us. So we've now had, I think, 5 or 6 weeks of public demonstrations in Anacortes, and we just want to begin our conversation tonight by kind of giving people a brief overview. And Anthony, I'd like to start with you, if I could, about what work is being done to address issues of equity and diversity in Anacortes right now.
You know, thank you, Terry. Well, it's been an awesome journey, I can tell you that. Starting with a wonderful town, but a town that had needed to have this conversation, obviously, for a long time. So some of the wonderful stuff that's come out of, as a result of the Black Lives Matter protest movements, the anti-racism groups are being formed. We have the Cultural Coalition, which tethers together diverse people, Asian background, Native background, African American, Caucasian background, Indian background. And what we're doing is having the conversations we need to have. Is it difficult, a conversation? Sure it is. But I can almost bet you that at most tables in this city, they've had this conversation and are continuing to discuss it. And it's been a wonderful thing, not only the protest, but there are movement and organizations. The city itself is making some moves toward being inclusive. Discussions with the police have been going forward. Groups are forming, youth are activated. They get it. And it's absolutely been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. And Keiko, I'm wondering what you see happening right now in response to Black Lives Matter and all the issues that it's raising.
Yeah, I think I echo what Anthony said. It's really just a kind of a wonderful time in our community's life too, where you see this energy and this education kind of passing virally between people. You see the youth really energized and rising up. I have three of my four children are involved in separate, but you know, aligned efforts to bring racial justice to the table. And it's just really, it's very, very cool to see them engaging, to learning about the civic process, you know, and all of the education, because it's not just the marches, right? It's moving that toward actual policy. And that's the journey they're on. So it's really, you obviously there's some pushback, but you know, for the most part, I think that there has also been really kind of a celebration of this sort of exploding awareness about Black lives and Brown lives.
You know, Keiko, I just want to say that I've met a number of your children, and they are fine leaders. And I'm happy to be led by them. They're incredible.
Yeah.
So Leslie, I just wonder what you're seeing happening right now and from your perspective.
Well, I guess I'm seeing some of the fallout is here locally, but also, you know, hooray, on a national level, our Washington football team has decided that their race name could go away, finally. And so I think there's just this groundswell of enthusiasm and an opportunity to create change. So that's what mostly excites me.
That's great. And Kate, I know you were one of the young adult leaders who helped to get the some of the public protests going in the first place. And we're really all very thankful for your leadership. But kind of what do you see happening from your vantage point?
Well, really, it started when the protests were picking up in Seattle. I was on the phone with a friend who lives in LA, and I was saying, maybe I should drive to Seattle. And at that moment, I got a text from a friend saying, hey, I'm going to be at 12th and Commercial. And honestly, it was kind of a radical moment for me, having moved back home and realizing that even in my own mind, I've been doing a lot of activism work in other cities that I've lived in, but that I had even exported my activism to the nearest metropolis. So it's been really wonderful. And honestly, I've felt the most like I've belonged in this town in these past 6 weeks through this type of work. So it's been really exciting to be a part of these conversations and to have the opportunity to meet and learn from y'all.
Well, Kate, I just want to say that it was such a beautiful thing because my wife and I were texting with folk who were leaders in Seattle, trying to figure out if we should head down there. And then I think Cheryl was the one that found out about it on Facebook. And so it was just so great, you know, to have this opportunity to go and still wear masks, still social distance, you know, and do all those appropriate things to take care of each other. But I just really deeply appreciate the leadership of all of you who helped get that initial conversation going down there on 12th and Commercial. So it's just been great. So as we now like talk about like what are some of the changes that need to be made in the institutions within Anacortes or on Fidalgo Island to increase equity and diversity? Keiko, I'd like to start with you if I could.
Yeah, well, my focus, although I don't speak for the district, it definitely is the focus of my attention. And, you know, I'm also a parent in the district and have raised children through the school system here. And so I feel critically and passionately that the primary institution of learning about racial justice should be our district. And we should be a beacon of light in that regard. And, you know, institutions by their nature are conservative. And I don't mean that in a political sense. I simply mean that in a conservation sense, maybe, of not moving fast. But I think, you know, you also see with COVID and you see with the monuments, the action around monuments, you see it with the Washington Redskins, where suddenly the things that we were told were impossible, suddenly they're possible, right? Like suddenly there are resources, suddenly there's a way, you know, when the need rises, so do solutions. And so I see this opportunity with the district to really turn its attention in very meaningful ways toward its own recently adopted policy about equity, and to lean into that unknown, but to do it with all alacrity and intention. So that's you know, focus right now is to really put fire into that conversation of what does that mean, and what does that mean not 5 years from now? What does that mean today? Right? Today.
So Leslie, I'm interested in knowing what are some of the institutional changes that you think might need to happen here for all of us to increase diversity and equity?
Well, for sure, I will just, you know, lead off with this since time immemorial curriculum that there is this mandate for districts to engage in their with their local tribal governments to get that history accurate and actually disseminated. I mean, I think that's the important thing, is to have movement from beyond the planning phases of it, but to actually get it down and get it agreed upon and negotiated and then articulated and shared. So for me, just bringing that years-long project to fruition would really be amazing.
Right. Thank you. And Kate, from your perspective, what do you think needs to change in terms of some of the institutions in Anacortes?
Well, I graduated from AHS in 2005, so I also feel like I can't really speak to the current state for what students are experiencing right now in the school district. But I can say that within the schools and beyond, within the city of Anacortes, I feel like, in general, the perspective about discussing equity and justice needs to be treated just as a fact, as compared to a political, divisive subject. And I feel like if there's a way that we can talk about that through addressing our history and our present tense in a way that isn't polarizing, but really just kind of matter of fact, rational, and with empathy, as compared to it being something that leaves somebody out, or to me, I feel like we're at that point where it really needs to just become something that we can all address without feeling that somebody's being attacked or left out.
You know, I really resonate with that, you know, Kate, and I'll just share for myself, you know, we have some aspirational values, around liberty and justice for all people, you know, endowed with certain inalienable rights. And we know that those values, those kind of constitutional values, have never been lived out fully, right? We know that they're aspirational, but striving for a more perfect union of all of those citizens, of all those rights, it shouldn't be something that divides us. Rather, that it is a fulfillment of some values that have never been lived out fully. And I feel like so often, you're right, Kate, it just gets blown into some kind of us versus them sort of political conversation, instead of it being the fulfillment of values that were stated and that we've never quite lived up to yet, and that we all long to live up to. So Anthony, how about you? What are some of the structural, you know, changes and institutions that need to happen here to further equity and diversity here?
Coming from the South, and coming from having grown up in segregation, integration, so much of the structures that were in place, not only psychologically, but economically, socially, all of the structures, the systematic racism and indifference to people of color, you know, so finding a way to walk across those balance beams, having come from nothing, wonderful parents, hardworking, but coming from that to where we are now, living in Anacortes, being a part of it, in the echelons and enjoying every single moment. But what also is clear to me is that we need to have this discussion as a society, truly for us to join forces together, the good of diversity. You know, there are questions we're not asking one another that we want to know that we don't understand, pretending as if we know. And so in order for truth to come forward and people to really resonate with one another, to connect at a deeper level rather than surfacely, we have to have that conversation. And this is what's happening now. Our city is having this conversation. Individual homes, the marches that have been so wonderfully orchestrated and by our youth, very clearly bringing so many people to the table, the horns of the people that are not there on the sidewalk, but trumpeting their horns in support, all carries a message. It carries a message that the conversation is being had. So if we have this conversation, if we can adequately teach, because these are unteachable moments, and therefore good hearts can never be the same. And the good heart allows us to talk about inclusion at a different level for those that may just be awakening to the reality of life for, you know, so many people of color, is that it is heartfelt and wonderful. So I'm saying structurally, inclusion, whether that's boards, whether that's having a say, the school system is one wonderful place that we can truly prepare our kids for the real world that's out there and the real world that's less than 15 miles away. But then also inclusively, whether that's in jobs, opportunity, education support, we have mechanisms here that we need to have those conversations with as well, such that we can all move forward together.
Thank you, Anthony. And I know some of the issues that we've all, you know, talked about, you know, so far, now one of them has been about like sort of the curricula, the history curricula at Anacortes High School. And Kate, you mentioned that you graduated in 2005. And I'd be curious for you to kind of think back for a minute about what was the basic story of human history on this continent, you know, that you got as a student of Anacortes elementary and middle school and high school. So what was the nugget of that story?
Well, we definitely didn't have a since time immemorial curriculum. I would say essentially the Manifest Destiny story was the core of what our history was based around and how it was taught. And I was trying to think about specific memories that I had in relationship to those lessons. And what stands out to me is more in middle school than in high school, because I think by high school, really, I just kind of felt in some ways disappointed. And so just found my places that I could exist in. And there were some safe spaces there. And I know that there are new teachers as well. In high school, I spent a lot of time like in the drama department, and that was like my safe place. But in middle school, specifically in our history class, we did kind of a reenactment of like a colony situation. And I remember that my role was like the land surveyor. And the fact that I had no critical thought about my role in this simulation, which was completed with a visit to the seat of our colonization in this country, with a visit to Washington, D.C., all of that without any critical thought, to me, speaks a lot about and you know what my takeaway was. So I guess I can't give you like specific details about, you know, all of the history, but I definitely in terms of talking about like slavery in the US, it was very much treated as discussing a trade and an economy as compared to human lives. I do have one memory, and I'll just quickly share, is that there was an artist who came to perform when I was in middle school, Kurt Lampkin, who's a beautiful musician, an African-American man, who plays the kora. And he speaks about being in a home, I think, that had bricks being thrown through it. And there must have been some good funding at that moment to bring him in. I saw him a few times, and I have one very specific memory of after he performed, some students asking if they could touch his dreadlocks. And he was so gracious with them, and the students were really just curious. There wasn't any sense of, you know, othering, or it was really just curiosity. But I remember in that moment watching and feeling uncomfortable, but not being able to articulate why I felt uncomfortable. And from these opportunities with these protests, being able to speak with folks, you know, 10 years younger than me, who are coming out of the high school now, there's a much higher level of sophistication about all of these issues that I was encountering as a young person. So I do see a big difference already, which makes me optimistic for there being more change, because they're the ones that are also pushing for that in the curricula.
And so, Kate, I'm just going to lean in just one more minute here with you. But so when you went to college, or when you left Anacortes, like, did you feel, you know, how did that telling of history prepare or not prepare you for kind of the world that you were encountering out there?
I will say that I was fortunate in that I did get to live in multicultural settings before, because my parents were teachers and they got grants to teach abroad for a couple times in my upbringing. So I got to live in a Muslim country for a year. And so I had a little bit of that, but the cognitive dissonance of coming home still hadn't really like settled in. And so when I went to college, I had a professor, Erica Lord, who's an amazing artist with Athabascan heritage. She does a lot of really interesting work about like critical attitudes about race and also her identity. And she had us read a lot about just simply the fact that whiteness is an identity, which is something that I had never considered before. That I had always been taught that it's sort of the baseline that everything else varied from. And so that to me was a big moment. But still, even being in a school like Evergreen that is kind of like a bubble, I had to move on to live in Washington, D.C. and then to San Diego to keep encountering all of these lessons, which today I'm still. So I guess, yeah, I think there were a lot of moments when leaving Anacortes that were eye-opening, and I feel fortunate that I got to be exposed to some of them, which obviously continues.
Thank you, Kate, and I really appreciate you sharing your experience there. And I'd be interested, Keiko, to see if you have any thoughts about Kate's experience and about the curricula in general. Like, how far has it, what is the curricula like right now, and what needs to change about it?
Well, I've been having some interesting conversations about that. And well, I'll tell you, you know, this comes from one of the petition signers. And so there is a petition, so listeners know, that was started to address the history curriculum in the school district and infuse it with an anti-racist, multicultural, you know, multi-voice perspective, which it doesn't have right now. One of the signers, and there have been several teachers who have signed on, and one of the signers said, you know, I have the same textbooks, I'm using the same textbooks that I did when I was a student at Anacortes High School, like in the 90s or something. It's the same book. And so there, you know, it's access to texts and materials, but it's also questions about how one teaches, you know, what are the methods of inquiry that are used, and just really preparing teachers for that inquiry as well. And it's not just history, it's, you know, how do anti-racist perspectives, how do they impact how math is taught, or science, or music, or drama? It kind of doesn't matter what the subject is when you're talking about that, you know, method of imparting ideas to our young, is that through an anti-racist lens or is it through a white-centered lens? And I think that, you know, as it stands right now, because there hasn't been an opportunity for teachers to engage in what is anti-racist teaching, the default is for every district across the country is going to be a white-centered curriculum, a white-centered perspective on teaching, white-centered ideas about achievement, about testing, you know, about classroom design. It doesn't matter what it is. It's all very much taught toward the status quo, which is, of course, is what I grew up in, too. So, you know, absolutely that push toward new materials with that critical perspective on race, gender, all of it, is long overdue. And I think this is the moment to say, this is, you know, this is the education our children need to go out into the, not just to go out into the world, to live in Anacortes. They need this, right? Just to be in the world, period. You know, they need this absolute just re-envisioning of what the values and the outcomes of education should be in this country.
You know, it doesn't harm anyone to recognize that, like, for instance, algebra is an Arabic word, right? Algebra was created by a Muslim, right? That actually helps us to see the incredible diversity and the contributions of many peoples and many cultures around the world, right? Leslie, I'm just wondering, like, what you heard in Kate's sort of experience and what you kind of hope that we can get to in terms of the way that we're talking about history in this town.
I think what really stood out for me, Kate, in hearing you talk about what your experience was, it resonates with my recollection of having had discussions with the district for a very long time about trying to get something going and, you know, they're it just being kind of in fits and starts and not ever getting enough momentum to have like a unified, cohesive result. And so it's like, really, Samish and art history kind of didn't really exist for you, basically, is kind of the bottom line. And I'm just sad for that because there's a lot of story to be told. And I think just as Anthony and other people have said, you know, we're all enriched by the information of learning something new. And, you know, and not just with history, but I would say there's indigenous methods of doing science as well. And so there's really good textbooks out there that are fairly classic. They're themselves are close to 20 years old. And, you know, I can rattle off a number of them that I know through my relationship of folks at Northwest Indian College, and they do indigenous science there. And I think all of the things that I know my ancestors were able to accomplish without a written system, they still had to use math, they had to use science, they had to use physics to make things work. And they had other ways of factoring that and figuring it out, but it's still another way of learning that's valid and real. So,
I'm just gonna, you know, pivot here, and we'll have more time, you know, obviously to hear from you, Anthony, but I'm wondering, you know, there is this petition that's been out there. What's the name of the petition, and where could people go to sign on to that? Does anybody have that with them?
Yeah, so the petition is called Decolonize the Anacortes School District's Curriculum, and it is online. It's on change.org, but it's also on Facebook. It's been shared probably over 350 times the last time I looked. And And it is open to, you know, anyone to sign on and in particular, students, former students, community members, parents, staff, and really, you know, broadly, because our children will walk out into the world, right? And so even if you're not from the Anacortes community, you want to, I would hope, you would want to support the children here being able to function as change makers in our world at large. And so it is open to anyone to sign. And, you know, the hope is to present it to the district. It's not my petition. It's actually my daughter's petition. And so she is working to present that to district administration in the near future to secure a firm commitment to change.
That's great. And I just wanted to say that we're posting that link on our Facebook page. It's also on our Zoom webinar as well. So when we're all done here, please click on that and consider signing it and just check it out. So I want to share just for a few minutes something that just kind of came up. To my awareness in the last week or so, and it's a kind of a mural and art project at the Anacortes High School. And so I'm going to share my screen, everybody here. And if you're listening on a podcast, this isn't going to work too well for you, but I'll try to narrate it a little bit. And so we're just going to show a few photos here. Let's make sure that that's showing right. So it sort of begins with this quote: "In the spirit of unity, we are guided by our ancestors." And yet, as I look at the photo, I'm seeing primarily history that maybe started around 1877 or something like that, or just soon after that, 1880s, 1890. And I don't see much in there about any ancestors of ours who lived on these islands before. And again, as I kind of go through the photos, there's a few places where there seems to be some people of color, not in these particular photos, but there's not very many. And history seems to, again, have started around 1890, you know, somewhere in there. This is, of course, what's the old high school here, a photo of that. Another quote here is, "Our story, the yardstick by which to measure the blessings we enjoy." And again, I keep wondering as I look at these photos over the last week or so, who's the we? Who is the we that's being spoken of here? Is it everyone, or is it just a more narrow sort of vision of we? And then this just completely blew my mind, to be quite honest, is this quote that which is at the end. Of a beautiful display, like it's a well done piece of art, you know, in many respects. But we live our lives by what we choose to see, and yet there is a lot in which there's a lot of I don't know whether it's intentional choice or not, but there's a lot of things that we've chosen not to see as a part of education on Fidalgo Island, as if education only began when the first high school was placed here. I want to show you another photo, kind of a historical photo of John Gast from 1872. This is a pretty famous photo depicting the spirit of Columbus, Columbia, coming across the country, and in her left hand, right hand, is an education book. And coiled underneath that is a telegraph, or as I like to say, that's the Comcast cable person of the day. And what we see in this painting is really manifest destiny. We're seeing a light to the east, trains and boats and cities and farming, and to the left, to the west, we see more gloom, and we see indigenous peoples retreating. We see wild animals retreating. And it to me is a very sad, and what I saw on this mural isn't so different, honestly, than this, and that was disturbing to me to see that. So I'd be interested to hear, friends, you know, kind of how you all respond to this mural and what is it, you know, what are students missing when they see this mural? And Keiko, I'd like to start with you.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about the mural. And I want to say that, you know, this discussion is not a criticism of the artist. It is a criticism of the process. Who was at the table? What questions were asked about history? It is not a criticism of the artist. If you looked at the mural as a whole, it's very beautiful. And our family's history is represented in artifacts that are part of this wall. So I think that, you know, the intent was to celebrate education and community in Anacortes. But again, there's that question of who is the we, right? And so when you look at this mural, it is a celebration in the end of whiteness. And you could say, well, that's because Anacortes is mostly white. And yet the children who attend Anacortes High School, the kids of color, every day have to walk past a wall in which they are not represented pretty much at all. Like it's 0.01% maybe that's up there. And so, you know, for me, that question of representation and the stories we tell, and what's really interesting about the mural, and I don't know, I'm assuming the artist was not really cognizant of this at the time, is that you go through this mural where no one is present except white people, and yet the end quote that we tell our stories by, you know, what we choose to see, what is interesting about that particular pane is that it is filled with well-known figures of color. So I think Muhammad Ali is there. Billie Holiday is there. There's a woman in, you know, a hijab that's there. And yet these are not figures, you know, that I don't understand. I puzzle over that. Like, how can we claim those stories as ours? Billie Holiday's story, you know, Muhammad Ali, how does that wall reflect their truths? It doesn't. And yet they're claimed at the end as if they are part of the outcome of, you know, education in as it exists and community as it exists in this town. So it's really interesting. It's a question about appropriation. It's a question about, you know, symbolism and representation. And so, you know, again, the process, I think, it was a flawed process, and in the end, it can only be celebrated if all you want to celebrate is whiteness in this town. So, you know, I just want to throw in one more question for the community is, okay, what do we do about this? Like, you know, it's one thing to talk about Confederate statues that, you know, were put up in the 70s or the 60s. At least there is a distance of 40 years or, you know, 50 to 60 years, but what do you do about something that is present day, that was celebrated by the school community, by the wider community as being a beautiful representation? What do you do about that? How do you address that? How do you make reparations for that? Those are open questions, but I think we have to grapple with them.
You know, so Anthony, I just would ask you to share any reflections you might have there, and then I want to ask Leslie how she feels.
Well, you know, thank you, Terry. Keiko, Kate, Leslie, the audience, I honestly, genuinely believe that the intent was wonderful, honorable, even though in reality we do recognize that there's a part of our society that deliberately wants to keep the focus singularly on what's called white America. I really just struggle with that concept because, you know, but anyway, they want to focus there, but largely I believe the intent was good. But what it also shows in this good intending depiction of light covering and illuminating darkness, it tells one side of a story. It's a one-sided story rather than the truth about what we've all been, whether it's Native history on this land for thousands of years, whether it's the culture that were brought in to do work, whether it was Asians that were brought in here, African Americans that were brought in, people of diverse hues that were brought in. What we had was people trying to tell a story they didn't fully get. Now, the opportunity we have right now is redefining that story, being inclusive like we've never been before. Or we can talk about continuing the same process that we know is not true. Columbus did not find America, unless you want to finish it and say he found it for European Americans. But there were people here for thousands of years. I mean, just since the beginning. And there were other cultures that had came through in trade. So the truth about who we are, what we are, how we got here, is the beauty of opportunity before us now in the system, in not only our beloved hometown of Anacortes, criticizing so much as to what we have now. What we are illuminating is the possibility of truly what we can be and telling a story that really helps all of us understand the contributions, and as Leslie said, not only the mathematics, the environmental science that were put in, that people were not ignorant, that they were really brilliant people that have done magnificent things to make the country what it is. We're just pushing to tell the true story such that all of our kids, regardless of, understand that the people that they will choose as their friendships, loves, and be around, that they choose them based upon the character of who they are rather than the skin type. And so what we're pushing against is that notion and that depiction that really may not have placed very much value on indigenous culture up until now. And what, you know, other cultures that have done hard work here. There are some Asian families that's been here for four generations. And so what I'm saying is, we want to have the discussion, not to eliminate anybody, but to be ever inclusive of the truth. And that's the best thing we can do for our students and the people living here, because the truth is, when they leave this island, there's a huge world out there that they will be woefully unprepared to meet head on, even though academically, meaning from books, that they may be good. So hence the change that we're suggesting is that we begin with teaching a true history. And even in the middle of COVID, we believe that it can be done. It is not such a huge lift. And there's no excuse for finding additional reasons to continue with a lie, because it is a lie.
Well, you know, so two things about this that I think they're really important, and I've learned in the work that I've done around race and racism and my own racism, is the difference between intent and impact. My intent may be just totally good, but the impact of my statements or my actions may be really detrimental. Absolutely. to my siblings. And so it's not about questioning people's intent. It's about us beginning to question the impact that our words and statements and actions have. The other piece to this is I was looking at lots of quotes about history, and I didn't find the one I wanted. And so I made one up, which is that the history we tell and the history we omit reveals who we value and who we don't.
Yes.
Superbly said.
And that's the pain that I see in that mural. Yeah. Is who we're valuing and who we don't. Right. And so, Leslie, I just want to ask, like, what message or what impact does a mural like that or the curricula that we've been talking about, what impact does that have, you know, on you as a citizen of the Samish Nation?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this. And I do recall when the tribe was actually invited to give some input. But I think part of the issue that's happened is, I think, number one, it's a visually lovely display. I don't think anyone can argue with the aesthetic value of it. And my perspective is that it was carefully curated, if that's the word that somebody would use, to try and find some, you know, real photographs, real artifacts, real, you know, examples. And for our people, prior to the invention of photography in the late 1800s, there were no photographs of Samish prior to colonization. There are, however, good imagery of in the late 1700s about our people greeting the first Spanish ships that came through the Guaymas Channel. And we do have access and rights to use some of those drawings. And I want to say that, you know, we made that known, that that was a choice, but the choice to not include them was really, I think that's the part that's disturbing to me, because it paints that picture that history began with the settlers and that there was no history prior to that. And all of our traditions, all of our oral tradition and our creation stories have us coming from here. They're serrated bison bones from Orcas Island that have been carbon dated to, you know, 13,000 years ago. So when you're talking about, when we say since time immemorial, we really mean that. We disagree with the theory of the land bridge and that, you know, there may be relatives there, but we still say we came from this place. And then when you look at other absence basically of Samish and iconic imagery like Maiden of Deception Pass and our seminal story that kind of defines who we are as the giving people comes from that story, that it's something that so many of our young people participate annually in ceremonies around that, and that's part of our identity. So I have a 10-year-old that's here in this district. She's not going to see any part of herself reflected on that mural whatsoever. It's as if Samish didn't even really exist. So for me, that's you know, a big disappointment. And when I hear questions about, you know, what do we do? I don't know that we can slap a stamp on top of it and add some new images or something. I'm just not really sure, you know, where you go with that, because it is artwork that depicted a person's vision, but let's not be limited. Let's look at where's there other opportunities for representation to be there. And even if we are 7% of the population nationwide, and probably less than that here in the city of Anacortes, in terms of Native communities and such, it's still, we're a tribal government that's right here in downtown. This is our headquarters for over 2,000 citizens. So it's important, I think, that everybody recognize that we're here, we've always been here, and we plan on staying. So, and we consider ourselves really proud and generous people about what we have to share.
Can I add one thing to that, Leslie? You sort of, I always love hearing stories and how about the Samish people in particular, in their watching as they willingly participate in almost every turn when someone comes and asks here in Anacortes, Samish Indian Nation joins as good citizens and good people, you know, which is really their spirit coming forward. One of the challenges that, one of the reasons why the cultural coalition, the ideal group we formed, part of the genesis of pulling together a group of people that will begin to address this issue of education. You know, one of the reasons why on that committee, we not only have Leslie, which is, you know, of course, a citizen of the Samish Indian Nation, but we also have Keiko, which is also, you know, culturally ingrained in this town, multi-ethnic, her children, you know, beautiful, very much organized. And we also have an African-American woman of Jamie Woodards, that's there. We have Caucasians that are there. The benefit of that is that we have people who are steeped and rooted in culture that are willing to step up and say, how can we help? How can we help get there as soon as possible, but as reasonably as possible and as accurately as possible to help us begin this year? So that gives a panoramic view in a beginning conversation of culture. And we believe that that is a strong representation to begin a conversation where action can take place rather than a perpetual putting off. Where you hold your priorities is where you put your budgets as well.
So I think that starts to shift us a little bit toward what are some of the things that we can be doing moving forward, you know, to positively, you know, enlarge the we, so that all of the beautiful folk who've lived here since time immemorial and who live here now can be represented and honored and their contributions, you know, brought forward as the gifts that they are. And we had a couple of great comments, you know, on Facebook tonight. I mean, one was, would it be possible for the museum maybe to do sort of an audio journal and podcast of people of color in Anacortes and some of their stories? And that's just a beautiful idea. And then also another person was commenting saying that you know, we have a sister cities group, but do we have a committee or a group of folk who organize sort of a cross-cultural events, you know, here in Anacortes to promote cultural awareness and with art through art installations and so forth? And those are beautiful ideas, but I'd be interested to know, Kate, if you have any ideas of things that we could do to kind of move forward. And in our 8 minutes or so, let's each share about a minute of what we think we might be able to do positively going forward.
Well, I think that whether you're a teenager or a senior in this town, I hope that we can keep building ways for people to engage in stories and educational opportunities, to just keep exposing people to new ideas and to more of a sense of grounding to all of the lives that have lived and shaped life in this town. And so what I'm hoping is we can just keep finding ways to build in public programming for that. So I do have faith that students will, you know, start to having a more decolonized curriculum, and I want our seniors to also have exposure to that as well as families. So that's what I'm hoping that we can work on. Whether it
be, I'd be interested to hear from you. Oh, sorry.
Oh no, just whether it be through art events or, you know, concerts. It doesn't all have to be, you know, painful moments of it. There's so many ways that this can take place for it to be really joyful as well.
Thank you, Kate. And Keiko, how about you? What do you think we could be doing moving forward?
Yeah, well, I think specifically about the wall. I mean, it's standing. I don't know what its fate will be. You know, I will continue to push for dialogue about it. But, you know, absent its removal, I think, you know, what I really want from that wall is just academic honesty. Like, just at very least, a discussion that is led for the students and the community that points out the fact that, I mean, it, in a sense, it is a correct wall. It is absolutely a celebration of, you know, whiteness, white education. You can't say it's wrong, but then you have to ask those questions. Where are the Native children? Where are the Chinese children? Like, where are they? You know, they're not there. Where are the Black children? They're not there. Then you have to ask that question, why aren't they there? You know, so yet the wall could stand, I guess, in a weird way, it's right, but then you have to ask that question about absence. And so I would love to see the school district and the high school engage in that kind of academic honesty, because that is what they should be standing for, is academic honesty. The other thing I just want to say for just the community at large too, and this isn't specifically our topic tonight, but this does have to do with education, is, you know, just really I encourage people to think of this work and think of, you know, this push to educate oneself, to spread knowledge it just always start with yourself, right? Like, we all carry bias, we all carry racism. I think it's most discouraging when I see people trying to check other people's racism, but really, you need to bring it home. You need to bring it home. You need to have the, you know, those painful discussions with yourself, and, you know, stop worrying about other folks. they'll take, you know, they're on their own journey, but we are each on our separate journeys. And I just really encourage, especially white folks, to do that painful work by of your own and by yourself. And you will be so much more powerful once you've done that. Instead of jumping, and that is a white thing to do, right? To jump five steps ahead and now we're all experts. But you really need to put yourself back in a beginner's position and be comfortable there. And know that that's where you're most powerful, is just having that beginner's mind that, you know, they talk about in Zen Buddhism. Always learning, always starting over.
Thank you, Leslie. I'm interested to hear what you have to say about what can be done moving forward around all of these issues of history and storytelling.
Well, and I'm just gonna tap one more thing onto something Kate said earlier about being asked to play a role, because I know in like maybe a decade or so ago, work with the school district on, you know, some of those baby steps of trying to work through since time immemorial, there was talk about teachers wanting the children to, you know, like, okay, we're going to have like this, these are going to be the kids who are going to be Native, and these are going to be the kids who are going to be the settlers and stuff. And, you know, from my perspective, boy, you can be a scientist, or you can be a doctor, or you can be president of the United States, but you can't be Native if you're not. And so trying to like try on a role and dress up like that is just, if nothing else, if we can scratch that off the list of an acceptable technique to use with kids, that we're not going to adopt the persona of someone else, because we have to do our own work. Like exactly like what Keiko was saying, each and every one of us has our own bit of work to do. And I can't imagine what it's like. I mean, I can imagine, but I can't be African-American. I'm not. And so the same with Asian-American. I only have what I am, which is a mixture. And I think that's it. It's in a nutshell, trying to get down to how do we deal with ourselves. And then I'll do one more quote from our late chairman, Ken Hansen, used to say many, many, many years ago when Samish was getting opposed all the time, all over the place, that some people want to draw a circle that leaves us out. And what we're going to do is we're going to draw a circle that's bigger, that puts everybody in. And I think that's what we're trying to do here, is get the circle bigger.
Thank you so much, Leslie. And Anthony, you got about 1 minute.
Hey, thank you, Terry. And I appreciate you giving me my time. I'm somewhat loquacious because I honestly believe that there's a lot to be said, because you're trying to give so much information in a short period of time, because guess what? These are conversations we've been long needing to have. Part of our soul has always wanted to have this conversation of all cultures and hues. So, but the thing that's so important for me right now is we continue to listen. So I'm challenging all of you out there to listen, to try to understand what the angst is, the anger, the fear, and that's to listen to one another. So one of the things that I'm hoping we do, not only as a cultural ideal group, but also as other organizations within our youth, Kate, the teams, that we begin to have the conversations. Part of what I'm hoping that goes forward is I'm going to suggest a movie which is really dealing with the Reconstruction period. Not only Reconstruction, but that 8-year period where there was far more integration, that there were successes that led to what was the Tulsa riot, whether Durham, North Carolina being also another Black Wall Street, and the fear that came out of that and the burning and the looting. But there was an eight-year period of reconstruction that was absolutely stunning. So what I hope to do is part of the ideal group, we push that forward, and then we have a sort of Zoom town hall meeting about it. We want to be able to recommend books to book clubs at this point for them to read and then come in and have an online discussion. Because not only do you come away with knowledge, you come away with having the ability to discuss it in a safe environment. There's a rich Native American history, rich Asian American history, rich African American history, rich, you know, Irish history. I'm 11% Irish. All African Americans here in this country are at least 15% white. Descendants of the very same people many of white America are descended from as well. So, but that's our history. And so how do we tell our collective story? Because America didn't get great on white people alone. It just wasn't. It was either the labor, the force, you know, in colonial Williamsburg, I mean, people were dying and the natives were still giving them food and help. We got here together. And the hope in all of this discussion is that we realize that. And so that's just simply the genesis of this push. It's not to push anyone away, to not to make anyone feel bad about the truth, but to use the truth to set us free truly and help all of us be able to grow from that. So there's a lot of wonderful stuff happening here in the town. We can't wait to tell you about us. Keep listening in, and I guarantee you, you may find something that intrigues you.
So I just want to say that, you know, I think as we begin to tell a story, a history that is inclusive of all of us here, I think we're going to find some moments of pain. As I have found, as I've been confronting my own racism in my life, but there's something much deeper and much, much more beautiful that emerges in that. Which is that I find as I'm letting go of some of that, as I'm recognizing it and making changes, that I'm recognizing not only the humanity of other people, but I'm recognizing my own humanity differently. And so there are moments of pain in this. And I think one of these days we should have a conversation about what are some of the points of pain that we're likely to experience as we engage this broader, deeper, more inclusive story. But I think that story is going to light a future that I think is going to be more wonderful than we can imagine if we will just endure some moments of pain and recognize the beauty in all of us. So I just want to thank you, Anthony and Keiko and Leslie and Kate. Thank you for being here with us tonight. And thank you all for listening. You can find out more about our work at pathstounderstanding.org. We have a new podcast that we're just launching. You can find that on Podbean and Apple Podcasts, called the Paths to Understanding podcast. We'd love to have you listen to that and share a like and maybe review and share it with one friend. We have a really big event coming up next week. We're going to have a week of live webinars in our partnership with Holden Village doing Interfaith Week this week. So check out our website and you can find out more about that. And until next time, be well, be calm, and be good to your neighbors. Thank you all for watching and listening.